Other stations promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
The morning show that's on your side. But then again, so is appendicitis.
Get ready for the most popular morning show anywhere on the internet. You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia right here on LA Talk Radio. If you'd like to take part in the show today, give us a call at 323-203-0815. And now your program hosts, Sam and Mia.
Good morning and welcome to Monday, December 9th. This nation is frozen. Have you seen what's going on?
The station is frozen. The nation is frozen. Yeah. Everyone's frozen.
Good morning to you, Mia.
I want to see that movie, actually. Frozen.
Frozen, yeah. That's a pretty good movie.
Yes, good morning to you, too. Sorry, I just kind of like cut you off there. But
remember when you asked me about the billboard?
It was the top of the snowman's head. I finally saw it. I was so excited.
Oh, God.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It looks so cute. I know it came out on Thanksgiving, but I really want to see it.
Yeah.
Well, I love those, like, cartoons
are great movies, yeah.
I'm actually really behind on movies. I have a lot of films I need to see. I still haven't seen the new Hunger Games.
I know you need to see that one.
Yeah, my mom, of course, when I was home for Thanksgiving, it's something that we usually like to do. We always go and see a film.
Right.
And, I'm like, what do you want to see? There's, so many different things. And, of course, my brother wanted to see Frozen, but they didn't have any more time because it was, like, late at night. So we like to go to, like, a super late night movie.
Uh-huh.
And, it was kind of... I don't know. I was kind of like bummed out because I wanted to see Hunger Games. You wanted to see Frozen. That wasn't playing. Yeah. And she's like, well, I really want to see Delivery Man.
Okay, I've heard of it. I don't know what it's about. We'll have to check it out.
Well, I'll do what Mom wants to do. No, I'm just kidding. No, it was fine. I was,
Yeah.
Either way, but no, it was that one with Vince Vaughn where he's just like a sperm donor.
Okay.
And he's got like a trillion kids because they use his sperm for like every female.
Right. Yeah.
So they're like trying to figure out who he is and whatever. So
I know a woman that gave eggs about 9 or 11 times. She's got like 11 kids all over the world.
Wow.
She doesn't know them.
Is she in touch? So she's not in touch with them
at
all?
No, no. I think she made a provision, though, that she wanted to or something. But I don't know if it ever happened or not. But they're like scattered around the world.
That'd probably
it's kind of
be
weird
up to like the,
that, huh?
The parents that are raising them, like the adoptive parents or whatever. Not adoptive, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, they're not really adoptive parents.
Right. No, well, the ones that are, going to be raising the child.
But, I get you.
Gosh, that's so interesting.
Yeah. How was your weekend?
It was good, actually. Yeah. My onesie party rocked. I killed it in my awesome leopard onesie.
Oh, you wore the leopard one.
I did. I was like the absolute life of the party. It was amazing.
Really?
Everyone loved my onesie.
Oh, I thought you were going to wear like a Hello Kitty or something, no?
I've never seen a Hello Kitty onesie that's like made for adults. Oh, believe me,
I'm surprised you haven't found one.
I've looked.
You've got everything Hello Kitty.
Trust me, they have like... little kid ones. Either that or they don't have like ones with like the hood.
Mm-hmm.
Like this particular onesie, like normally it's just like a zip up one. They just got like the little footies.
Right.
But this one is so advanced because it's by Pajamagram.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I've heard of them, yeah.
Last year, around the, winter season, my grandparents sent me one. It's so cute because it comes in like this cute little box and it's like Pajamagram. I'm like, what the hell is this? And then I'm like, oh my God, they've got to be kidding me. But
they've got some cool PJs though, it's a great idea for a gift.
And it's great because the ones, and I mean, they're really expensive. But the ones on the Pajamagrams, the sock parts at the, like the little footy parts at the bottom over your feet, they can zipper off.
Mm.
So I like wore shoes when I was outside. And then after I got in the party, then I was able to take my shoes off and put on the little footy part, so you don't get like the bottom of the PJs dirty. It's so nifty.
Yeah,
and then it has a tail and it like zip zippers up, and then there's like little paws and kind of like thumb holes, you know, so it kind of go over your hands. Wow. Those little paws on the hands,
yeah,
paws on the feet, and then you a go hood all out with I the ears. That. It was yeah. it was great.
Yeah,
everyone was like, wow. You were, the best were there any?
Oh, so that was the best, right? Was there anything else memorable there?
I saw a couple of really cool, like superhero ones. Mm. Like there's onesies, and then they come with like a cape. So there was like okay. Batman with the cape, and what was the other one? I think there was a Superman one right. with the cape. So that was kind of cool.
Right now, what do the guys wear? I can understand the girls, but what the do the guys wear?
Wore the onesies, like the superhero ones, were oh, yeah? worn by guys, and then there was a guy. I was trying to figure, I'm pretty sure this is what it is because it looked like, you know, and I think it's like Channel 4 that, you know, Anchorman.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it. But I know all about it.
It is like the most epic movie ever. I cannot wait till Christmas because the second one comes out.
Uh-huh.
But Ron Burgundy, there's a guy wearing a onesie of like Ron Burgundy.
Uh-huh.
Like it was like his, really? Like the maroon like suit with the tie and the little like pin that said Channel 4 News.
Mm-hmm.
It was, yeah, it was epic.
That's
was
funny. Like,
Ron Burgundy.
That's funny. So this is cool. So, I mean, it's like so cold. I talked to my friends up north in Northern California.
Is it even colder
minus,
there?
Yeah, minus 20 degrees.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I mean, that's cold. You know, he's saying this is the first time he's seen the snow stay on the ground
uh-huh.
for a long time. So in a few years.
Yeah.
So,
no thanks.
You know, we sit here and we complain about 40 degrees. You know, they're sitting mm-hmm. there and they're freezing their buns off.
I know. But, even back at home, my mom's sending me photos of, you know, pictures yeah. of outside with, you know, snow everywhere. And I'm like, oh,
wow.
gosh,
yeah.
that looks terrible.
How did your team do yesterday? The Bears, did they win?
Tonight.
Oh,
we
tonight.
Got the, we got Monday okay. night football.
Who are you playing?
Woo! I think we might actually be playing the Cowboys.
The Cowboys. Okay,
yes.
interesting. They
yes.
need their asses kicked once again.
Oh,
so
yes.
Why not the Bears,
I
right?
am not a fan of the Cowboys at all.
Yeah, they haven't done well in a long time, you know. But, I mean, they're a great team. They're an inspiring team. A lot of people love them. They call them America's
they
team.
They
call them
America's
won.
Team, but it's like, what?
They haven't won in so long, you know.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
But what are you going to do? You
I know.
Know. Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Exactly. So I was going to go to the burlesque show on Friday that we
oh,
were invited
that's right.
to, and I ended up not going because I had stuff to do. And but they're going to have it back in January, so I think I'm definitely going to catch it then. You know, it seemed pretty cool.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Based on what she said, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
when Donna was here.
Well, hey, can't you know? I'm sure you don't mind going to watch half naked women.
No, I don't. But, she,
but it's like a classy strip tease
it
kind
is,
of thing. Like
you
it's
know?
Not
I mean, pretty...
burlesque is not like a nasty, gross, raunchy thing.
No, it's
like
not it's, at all. I mean,
it's
people,
interesting.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
it's very intriguing.
There's some famous burlesque dancers and stuff. You know, it's not like a sleazy thing or anything.
Yeah,
it's like a show. People put on a show. You know.
Yeah.
And so I heard it's great. I've never been to one, you know, but it mm-hmm. sounds good. And she says a lot of women come too, so I'm sure it's pretty interesting.
Oh, know? Yeah, for sure.
I don't know what to tell you, but yeah, that's the situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I actually, Beecher's had like one like legit like burlesque show. It's just like one female that just did her thing. And mm-hmm. it was really awesome.
Mm.
Because a lot of times I go, oh, burlesque dancers, but they're not. Like, they stay in the same costumes, like a group of girls dancing. Like, they have that at the W, and they call them burlesque dancers. I'm like, no, that's not real burlesque. I mean, they're just, like, dancing, like, with a chair or whatever, but
yeah,
it's different from, like, what, real
yeah,
real
whatever
burlesque.
They dance
you
with.
You end up
know.
With, like, you know, you've got, like, crazy, like, elaborate, feathery, sparkly costumes, and then you end up with just little sparkly, like, star pasties over your boobies.
Yeah.
And a small thong.
I know. Well, you know, whatever satisfies you, you know. I mean, the thing
yeah.
is that there's a lot of great shows, and I want to mm-hmm. start going out to more live shows, you
yeah.
know. And, you know, because movies, I mean, you see movies, you watch them at home and stuff. I started watching Jobs, by the way. Have you seen the Steve Jobs movie with Ashton Kutcher?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I started watching it last night. Pretty good stuff, you know? I mean, your mind would probably get dizzy from all the technical
probably.
Stuff.
Probably. That would be like, nyeom, like yeah. right over my head.
But I would imagine yeah, with most people with it would be like that, you know? So mm-hmm. you just watch it and enjoy it for the drama, you know?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Well, sounds good. I hope everybody listened to my music show this morning. I had a blast, you know. I mean, I put on some great...
Yeah, you're telling me your,
great tunes
your and, tracks this morning.
And
it's
people were giving me feedback on the social networks, so that's good. You know, I mean, I got up an hour earlier to start doing this every day, so they better, you know, appreciate this. And for, you know, but I got to tell you, I went to bed early as opposed to every day. You know,
really?
I went to bed like
how'd you do that?
11:30 because I knew I had to get up early. Yeah, I knew I had to get up early.
And you actually fell asleep at 11:30? You weren't just like laying there chilling,
no,
I can't do this.
No, I managed to go to sleep. Yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Well,
there you
stick
go.
Stick to it.
Yeah, because I needed to be awake for our guests this morning. Been sitting here patiently and waiting for us with all our garbage so we can get to them. And very special guests in the studio. We have Amelia Jackson. Welcome to the show, Amelia.
Hello.
And we have Skeet. What's the last name?
Ulrich.
Ulrich, that's right. Welcome to the show, Skeet.
Thank you.
And so you guys here live in L.A.?
Yes.
Yes, we do. Studio City.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Now, you sound like you're from overseas.
I am originally. I'm from England, but I've been here 10 years, so this is home.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Well, we'll find out about what made you come here and everything in a little bit. You guys are a couple, right? Did you just get married recently? Is that true?
About a year and a half ago, yeah.
Oh, so it's not that recent.
No.
Well, I looked it up online.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they got a website full of their wedding pictures and stuff that just looks awesome, you know. So congratulations to you guys.
Thank you.
How did you guys meet?
We met. I was doing a show called Law and Order Los Angeles, and Amelia came on, and that was that.
So it's usually meeting on the set, huh? I mean, that's why it seems to be like actors stay around
Where
actors and things
we?
Like that. Yeah, exactly. Huh?
You are hard to meet at an insurance agency.
That's true. That's true. And Skeet, where are you originally from?
I'm from Virginia.
Oh, from Virginia. Mm-hmm. So you're definitely an American more than I am. And
well, maybe.
You have a little bit of an accent. I thought it was maybe like a foreign accent or something.
I'm French.
Oh, you are French.
No,
you're not French. You don't sound French. But of course, you don't sound French to me.
I do not.
Oh, boy. Sam loves doing that accent.
Let's roll through them.
There we go.
Yeah. So let's start off with the fact that you guys are working on a project now. I mean, at least that's what we get from the PR is your project called Point Magoo. And I know Point Magoo is a place about an hour north of here, right? There's like a military base, a Navy base there?
Yes, it's northern Malibu. It's just over the county line of Ventura County.
Right.
And
like near Oxnard, right? Right before Oxnard.
A couple of miles from Leo Carrillo, if you're familiar with that.
Right, yes. That's a beach. That's a famous beach.
It's a lot of people go camping there. They know that campsite.
Right.
They haven't necessarily heard of the campground at Point Magoo, but there is one.
Oh, so there is campground at Point Magoo as well.
Yes, there is.
I see. Wow. Very cool. So, I mean, why would you focus on that area? What is the story about?
Well, I think Amelia probably should take that one. I mean, ultimately, it's just a beautiful site, right, where the one plunges towards the ocean. Mm-hmm. And so there's a little...
The one that's Pacific Coast Highway, for those who don't know. And, so it sort of like stops there, right? And then it continues.
Kind of. I mean, it feels like it does because it turns right against the ocean. But she'd been going there for years and just felt it was the perfect spot to... tell a Hitchcockian type story.
Wow. So you just like the area there? You just go there? And...
Well, like Ski said, I've been camping there for years. I'm an avid camper.
Oh, really?
We actually just went to Joshua Tree this weekend. It was really cold, but
really?
It was really fun.
I hear it's fun there. Yeah, a lot of people camp out there.
It's
right?
beautiful, especially this time of year. Surprisingly, you wouldn't think, but it's the prime season right now. It's when all the climbers go and... I find it too hot to go in the summertime, so now's like the prime time. But anyway, so Point Magoo is a place that I've been camping for years, and every time I've gone there, the tent, you pitch your tent right on the sand, so you're sandwiched between the ocean and the Pacific Coast Highway.
I see.
And when the sun goes down, throughout the evening, you can hear the crashing of the waves, and then you can see... the trucks and the cars coming down the Pacific Coast Highway, lighting up the headlights, lighting up the cliffs,
wow.
the rocky cliffs. And so I'm camping there. And every time I'm there, I'm thinking, gosh, this is a Hitchcock movie just dying.
Really? Wow.
and my friend Aaron Ross and I, we've been creating some sketch comedy together and writing together. And our second, we both thought to each other, we want to start doing something a little longer. So we created a short film. And I took my friend Aaron there. I said, you've got to come check out this spot. Mm. And we went camping there one August evening and came up with our story.
Oh, really? So it totally like inspired the story as well, not just the ambience of the place, right?
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. So when did that happen? When did you first decide you're going to do something about that?
That was August of last year, 2012.
Oh, I see. So it's pretty recent.
Yes.
I see. And so Skeet, you became part of this as well. Were you part of it from the beginning as well? Did you know each other?
Yeah, we did know each other. We were already married at that time. I just, you know, watched them come up with the story and listen to ideas and helped where I could.
Right.
Skeet's an incredibly seasoned actor and storyteller, uh-huh. and he really helped guide the entire process. From the script to the production to post-production, music, sound, you name it.
Wow.
Skeet really molded and sculpted and helped shape the entire process.
That's amazing. Is this the first time you did that? I mean, other than
it's the first time I've worked on a short film. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's usually, you know, you're just a hired gun and you come in and act and everybody else takes care of everything else.
Right.
This one, you're kind of, you become transpo, you become catering, craft service. I mean, we did everything on our own with a, you know, 6-7 man crew. And so you have to jump in feet first and take care of every other aspect. So yeah, that was the first time I'd done that kind of thing.
Right. Well, it sounds pretty interesting. I mean, you learn from this and then you can move on, you know, in your career and do different things and stuff. Now, did you have an idea for the story, or how did the story come about?
The story came about very organically. My friend Aaron and I, like I said, we went camping there. It was one August evening. It was very warm. We were sitting there at midnight in shorts and t-shirts on the sand, brainstorming, mm-hmm. coming up with films that we loved that have inspired us, that where nature really plays a large role, because mm-hmm. it's such a natural environment. We really wanted to incorporate all those elements, and we knew that it was an eerie place as well. Point Magoo is a little scary if you haven't been there before and you go there for the first time. Mm-hmm. As you're camping there, you know, and you're sandwiched between this highway and the ocean, it's kind of scary. Wow. So we were trying to think of different ways, like, to kill off the characters, interesting ways to kill the people in the movie, but without them killing each other.
I see. Okay, so that's kind of a movie where you first think about how to kill off the people, and then you go to the start and you think, okay, how are we going to bring them to their death, right?
Yeah,
Something like that.
We were really just sort of looking at other films that really inspired us. Like I said, other Hitchcock films. The Birds was a big inspiration for Point Magoo.
Right. Now, I know you've done quite a few films and stuff, and you were in Scream, right?
I was,
in the movie Scream. And so you had some experience with scary movies and things like that, right?
Yeah, I've done a couple of The Craft, but The Craft was not necessarily a horror film, but uh-huh. Scream, definitely.
Get closer to the mic so we can hear you well. And so how did you get interested? Did you always like that type of film?
That type of genre, yeah, absolutely. I started off in horror films, indie, low-budget horror movies, like Snakes on a Train and...
there was Snakes on a Train, too?
Yeah.
Really?
Was,
wow.
Snakes on a Plane? Nope. It was Snakes on a Train.
You see, Mia, that's how you get started, you know?
I know.
With
well,
like that.
I was doing those for sure. I still... Well, look what I produced. Dead
that's
Girls.
True.
That's kind of a, you know...
Dead
I love.
Girls.
Yes. I love working on them, but I cannot watch them. I'm mm-hmm. such a baby. I'm such a scaredy cat. I cannot watch scary movies. I love to work on them, though, you know, because it's like... okay, it's all fake blood, it's all for show, but watching it, I don't know, my mind just takes over.
So this is meant to be like a film for wide distribution, or is this like a TV movie? How is this distributed?
Well, ultimately, it's it will become part of a series, sort of like Hitchcock Presents.
So
we're making a series of them, and then we'll find a way to distribute them in a TV type way.
I see. How long is it? Like an hour long, 2 hours long?
This one's 26 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The next one's about the same, and then we're in the process of writing the third one and developing the fourth one. So. It just goes on.
But, I see. Okay.
Ultimately, yeah, it'll become a new sort of Hitchcock Presents, or what's the other one?
Or like Twilight Zone, or Tales from the Dark Side. It's sort of that kind of formula of short stories that are totally separate from
each
other.
They're not connected in any way.
Not connected, apart from the psychological sort of drama behind them.
Right. So you're really creating an entire brand here. It's not just one film, but you're going to have like a whole ongoing thing with this.
Yeah.
Incredible. So is this complete now? I mean, is this ready to be watched if people want to see it?
Point Magoo is, but it's not on any platform that it can be watched. We've taken it to a few film festivals and done quite well with it. The last one we won 4 awards at.
Really? Nice.
In Brooklyn, Williamsburg Film Festival. And so it's well received, but there's nowhere for the public to see it yet.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it sounds fascinating, and having been in the area and everything, I think it would be kind of like, wow, this is neat. You know, I know the area. Look at the story that's happening here. You know?
Yeah, that's very cool. How does it, the actual location of Point Magoo, how does that actually work? Like, can you like make like a bonfire on the beach and just like,
Make a bonfire, but they do have fire pits there, so you can have a fire on the beach. But you know, ultimately Point Magoo is really a commentary on our environment. You just don't see it coming. So it's woven into this you know, this Hitchcock type feel story, but it's really ultimately an environmental tale, an eco thriller.
Very interesting. So the story, so Aaron Ross came up with the story, or was this like something you
collaborated? We sat together and we brainstormed different ideas on the beach, and we developed the story together.
I see. And who directed the movie?
Francis Dre.
Uh-huh.
He's an regional Emmy award winning DP.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always wanted to direct, and he's a very close friend of ours. Uh-huh. And we've been collaborating on short comedy sketches in the past, and this was sort of the next step for all of us.
I see. Okay. So you like different genres and stuff, comedy, horror, all that kind of stuff, right?
We do.
Yeah.
But this is particularly the genre that we're wanting to focus on right now, this psychological thriller.
Yeah.
And each one of our stories, even though it has a timeless essence to it, in that Hitchcock Presents does as well, where, you know, the stories stand up no matter what day and age you're watching them in.
Right.
The stories stand up and are strong. But our tales, each, even though they have a timeless essence to them, they are very much set in our world in which we live in today.
Mm. Interesting. Well, sounds great. So you're originally from Great Britain, right?
Yes, I am.
And so you grew up there. What kind of a childhood? Did you have a nice childhood?
I did, actually. I spent a lot of my childhood coming back and forth between California and England.
Oh, really? What did you have here that made you go back and forth?
My parents, they're adventurers themselves, and they just loved California, and they would import English decorative arts and antiques, and they bought and sold property over here. And so they had the business over here, and then eventually we moved back to England.
I see. So you moved back and forth a few times. So California was not like a new place for you when you finally decided to move.
Exactly. California's always been a massive part of my heart. And I always wanted to build a life here when I became an adult.
That
was what my dream was.
Yeah, and that's strange. Yeah, because it is kind of a different lifestyle from living in England, right?
Very much so. Makes me cold just thinking about it.
Yeah. Do you have any siblings?
I do. I have a brother and a sister. My brother's 21st birthday is actually coming up, and we're about to go and visit him in England next week.
How cool.
Aww,
so, and you guys are close, all the brothers and sisters and stuff?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
That's cool. And so at what point, so you would come back and forth here and stuff. At what were you doing growing up there? Like in school and stuff? Did you already already discover you wanted to be a performer?
I did. I always had a need inside me and a little voice saying that I should be an actress. My grandmother was an actress as well, so I think it was just in my blood.
Wow.
And it was my calling from a young age.
Wow, that's interesting, you know, because, did you feel like that too from a young age? I want to be an actress?
Oh, for sure. I was really? Always performing so any chance I got.
So this starts at a young age, huh?
I started pretty young, but yeah.
Wow. What about you, Skeet? I mean, what you grew up in Virginia, you said.
I did, yeah.
And do you have any siblings?
I have a brother, yeah, Jeff, who's 10 months older than I am.
I see.
Yeah.
10 months. Wow.
Yeah, Irish twins.
Yeah.
Between drinks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Never heard that one before. That's a good one, man. Yeah. So you grew up there. Did you at an early age also decide I want to do something with performing?
No, not at all. All my family's race car drivers in NASCAR. Wow. And so that was my life until.
So it was expected of you pretty much? I mean, is that what you wanted to do though?
It was, but you know, I couldn't, we were grew up pretty poor and couldn't afford to, you know, even get a go-kart to start trying. And my stepdad would, he was a race car driver as well, and he would sell the sofa to buy parts.
So, wow.
But yeah, that was, it's in my blood. It's, you know, something I still enjoy. My son races. He's 12 now, but he started racing 110 mile an hour cars when he was 9.
And, wow.
Yeah.
So it's, they actually allow that?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and it's very safe. We've seen kids flip those cars and get out smiling. And
really? Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
So, that's my bloodline is just racing. And
wow. So did you, mentioned you guys were poor and all that stuff. Did you have a tough childhood because of that?
Not really because of the money, no.
No?
No. I mean, we had a pretty normal childhood, you know, at a certain point.
Right.
But you know, typical stuff.
And right. Was that like a small town in Virginia that you grew up?
Or well, I was born in Virginia, and then when I was 6, I lived all over the place, from Florida to upstate New York to Pennsylvania.
How come you moved around like that?
Just family drama.
Really?
and then I wound up in North Carolina, where NASCAR is sort of the center of NASCAR around 10. And then I moved to New York City when I was 19, and I found out I wanted to act. I've always built stuff my whole life, and I was building sets for a theater company in North Carolina.
Oh, wow.
And decided that I wanted to be on stage, and so I went to NYU, and I had David Mamet and Bill Macy as teachers, and some of the best voice and movement people you could imagine, and did theater for a long time. And then just, you know, the good thing about New York stage is typically directors will walk in and see your work, and they did. And I got offered films from that, and then didn't look back and haven't been on the stage since.
Wow, yeah. That's interesting. Now, so how did you, I mean, at what point did you discover you liked theater? Was that before you went to college or after?
It was after. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. In fact, I didn't even know you went to college until they passed out the form your senior year asking, you know, for the yearbook where you were going to college. And I thought, oh, I better start figuring this out. And so I randomly chose a school and randomly chose a subject, but didn't like it much, and started building for the theater. And then I was sort of the last one in the theater, the last night of the run, and standing on the stage, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And,
That's interesting.
I knew I would never be the performer I wanted to be if I stayed in North Carolina, and sought out the best training I could get, and was fortunate to be able to pursue it. And
So your story is pretty much that classic. You were on stage and you got discovered and stuff like that. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, who would ever think, you know, that you start with a poor family, you know, you travel around, you don't know what the hell's going on, and then suddenly it's like, I know what I want, this is what I really want, and things work out for you.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a lot of helping hands along the way.
Obviously.
And you know, and by that I mean willing parents, willing family, and incredible teachers. And, you know, you know, it was where I feel my education began. I was not much of a student through school. Mm. And I would encourage all those who feel that to not lose hope. I mean, there's, you know, the great thing about what we do is, you know, we get to look at all kinds of different lives and you know, learn as much as we can about them. And I've learned more about the history of the world through film than I ever did sitting in a classroom.
Wow,
and,
that's amazing. Yeah. So how did you start getting the gigs on stage, though, in New York?
Was initially, it was just school. You know, I mean, that was part of our training, was to put up plays for a couple of weeks and perform in them and do all kinds of things for them. And then, you know, you'd start to branch out and get hired by other theaters and other directors. And I was cast in a Broadway play late in my time at NYU and wound up not even doing it to go pursue it, to do a film, my first film. And I don't know, I enjoy stage, but to me, you know, it's, you have an idea on stage of how to do a scene differently, and it's 24 hours before you get to try that idea out in film. You are in the middle of a scene, you have a different idea of what you want to try. It's 5 minutes and you get to try it out, and it just works to the speed of my brain a little better.
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah. Amazing. Now, Amelia, you had that sense of wanting to act and everything. How did you go about it? I mean, what did you start with, theater, or how did it work exactly?
I did start with theater, similar in the way that Skeet did as well, because I went to a drama school in England, and it was part of our program to put on plays and make films and TV shows and basically get involved with the entire filmmaking process. We even did radio plays that we would write and put on for broadcast standard level. So we were always tearing down sets, putting up new ones, and the paying public would come in. We had a professional theater that we were sort of facilitating.
I see. And so how did you make your transition from theater to film, television? How did it progress exactly?
Well, when I left the drama school, I decided to go down to London and get some sort of job in the business.
Right.
And
that's kind of scary, huh? I mean, you don't know what you're going to get. I mean, you're just starting out.
Exactly. And I got a job at a sound mixing facility where I was able to work at the front desk on reception, but also be able to do voiceovers for any of the clients that weren't happy with the voiceovers that they were getting, or if they hadn't thought of a particular voice that they needed and things like that. So I built up a voiceover resume and reel by doing that. And that company decided to move to Los Angeles and branch out here and start a company here. So I was brave and I said to my boss, I really would love to help you develop the business here in LA. And he was like, great, let's do it. And to this day, we're still in touch. And he's actually, his company provided the sound mix for Point Magoo and is currently working on the sound mix for our next film, The Girl on the Roof.
Oh, very cool. Tell us about The Girl on the Roof. Tell us a little bit about that.
The Girl on the Roof started because Skeet's children, Naya and Jacob, who are 12 years old, they're twins.
They are twins.
A girl and a boy.
Okay.
That's so cute.
I know, they're so cute. Yeah. And they were very much hands-on with Point Magoo as well. They were there during the entire production, which was, you know, wild and fun, being down in Malibu for 5 days filming, and they slept in the RV and were very much a part of the whole process. And Naya is a budding actress. She also has the calling that you and I have, Mia. And she was like, I want to be in one of your movies. Can I? And so I had a word with Skeet, and I said, what do you think about this? Is this something that you're okay with for Naya? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. You know, if it's a family production and we can sort of sculpt the content of the piece and everything. Mm. And so for her birthday, I wrote her the story, and the story is the content and the message behind it is about bullying in schools, because that's what they're facing these days in schools. These children are having to deal with bullying. And we were going as parents to these, the schools would put on these long talks about how to handle and bullies and when how to address it when it comes up. Right. And so we decided to sculpt this story around that.
Yeah. And, wow. You know, I mean, now we're talking about bullying and stuff, but it's not really now. I mean, it's always been around, right? I mean, people have always been bullied and stuff. I just think it's good that now it's been brought to the, mm-hmm. you know, to the surface, yeah. so people can actually address this and teach kids how to behave and how to respond to that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty serious subject. I mean, it definitely hits close to home for me because, you know, I dealt with a lot of that.
I think everybody has that, you know, just because there's always like the tougher kids, you know, and mm-hmm. they probably get bullied by older kids and all that. So it's always like one big thing, you know. But so it sounds like you enjoy writing as well, though, right?
I mean, I do. Absolutely. Yeah. It's an interesting process.
Right. So, I mean, you just like see something like bullying. OK, I'm going to sit down and write a movie about it.
Well, like I said, the schools were like calling us in and uh-huh. we had mandatory meetings where they gathered all the parents together, and for 3 hours they would tell us the difference between how girls get bullied, how boys get bullied, how the kids should handle it, how the parents need to handle it. And it was very insightful. And, you know, they talked about the development of the brain at that mm-hmm. age and how the frontal lobe isn't fully formed and how they, you know, don't have the same judgment we'd have as adults. And it was really interesting. And then at the age of 12, you witness it firsthand when things go down at school.
Right.
And it's a very delicate age. So it just seemed like the right subject matter and an important right. and a very important story to tell at this point.
Great. So you're integrating the kids into this as well?
Well, they've grown up on sets.
Yeah.
And they're very comfortable in front, behind, around the camera.
That's crazy. And that's what they want to do, right?
She does. He doesn't.
No.
He wants to drive race
cars. It's interesting,
cars.
Yeah.
But they've, you know, I allowed them to do one. I won't let them enter the business until they're 18, till they're old enough to really know what it is and you know, seek out training. But I did let them do one movie, which was Due Date. They had a couple scenes with Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, really?
Juliette Lewis.
I remember that movie. That was funny.
You probably remember my son getting punched in the stomach then.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Robert Downey Jr. punches him in the stomach.
Really?
In the movie. And so they've always been, you know, around it and comfortable with it. And you know, but it's my daughter's first, other than plays, she's done her first, you know, real starring performance, and she's quite incredible in it. And it's, you know, we're not done with the movie yet, but it's the people we've shown it to are just rave about it. And
wow, sounds good. See,
we're excited because we have the amazing Lenny James in it, and Todd Lowe as well from True Blood.
Oh wow. So that's cool. Cool. Yeah. Now, so I wanted to ask you now, so you started getting into film when you came here to LA, is that when it happened?
I was trained at drama school in England,
right.
To make films, write films,
as
well.
So not just acting, but
it was
the whole thing.
My course that I was on was specifically acting focused. However, we had to get involved no matter what course. If you were on the directing course, the production course, or the acting course, we had to all interchange. And so the people on the production course would play certain roles in the plays or the films, and the people on the acting program would have to make the costumes, build the sets, and get involved in that way as well. But obviously the people on the acting course would get better roles, and the people on the directing course would get the opportunity to direct.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting how you both chose to actually go to school to learn the craft, where many people don't, you know. They just feel, oh, I'm just going to, like, you know, hit the pavement and see what happens and stuff. But I think you guys sort of like got like an overview of the industry, you know, of what's going on. It's not just like going out there and hoping the best happens, you know. I mean, you actually did something about it, and you both did it by going to school.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately you either love to tell stories or you love to be famous. And you know, I think there's a lot of people that, you know, seek the ladder and, you know, will achieve some modicum of success, but it's probably short-lived because you just don't have the wherewithal or the training or the understanding of how to do more than just that one thing of being yourself. And, you know, it takes a lot to transform and to, you know, and I know my theater training was all about finding neutral, you know, finding a neutral speech, a neutral body, everything so that you can alter it in the way that
That's
you want
true.
To.
That makes sense.
And you know, you don't get a lot of that if you don't, you know, the only way you can do that if you don't train is to, you know, is to try it, you know, hopefully get a job and try it out. And then, you know, usually you fall back to whatever's comfortable when the pressure's on and you find sort of the same performance over and over and over and over again.
Right. You know. Yeah, I agree. So you moved out here and stuff. And how did you start getting roles?
Well, I was auditioning a lot. I would find my own auditions a lot of the time as well. Mm. Obviously, I had a manager and I had an agent, but my agent said to me when I first signed with her, an agent gets 10% commission because an agent does 10% of the work, which means that the actor needs to do 90% of the work.
Wow, that makes sense.
To find their own work, to when they have work, all of that. So I really took it upon myself to find my own opportunities, my own auditions, and the auditions that my agent would get me was a bonus.
Yeah, that's true. So did you start auditioning for television or film? What were you attracted to first?
Primarily film.
Film.
I was interested in the time that you get with film, developing a character, and the places that you get to go, that sort of stuff. I was very interested in film. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds fascinating, you know, when you want to become an actor and everything. There's all these, like, fringe benefits that you get with it, you know, like travel and see different places and all that. So I can see why people like really, really work hard to get to that point because, you know, on the one hand, you think, God, it's so hard to make it in Hollywood, you know, and not many people actually succeed and stuff. And you wonder, why do people even try, you know? But I think people do because you feel that's what you need to do, that's what you're supposed to do, and that's what... You know, that's what would make you feel complete.
Yeah, and I think as filmmakers, you are the eyes and ears of our world in which we live today. And
right.
If you can translate that into a story and create stories, I feel even if you go to drama school and have training, you're still always learning.
Right.
I've continued to study screenwriting and storytelling by taking courses since I've been here in Los Angeles with Robert McKee and reading screenwriting books and things like that. So I can eventually create our own stories.
Awesome. Awesome. And so you guys are working on this now. Let's just get to the point where you moved to L.A. At what point did you move to L.A.?
Well, I lived in New York till 95, so I lived there about 7 years, six, 7 years. Then,
and did you start making films there too?
I did. I lived there while I made the first four films I did, but three of them were shot here, and I moved out here for a very brief time in 95, and I went to Austin to work on a film, and then I was offer only on films, so I moved to Virginia, bought 500 acres, and lived there for 6 years, and I made about a dozen movies while I lived there, and you know, traveled all around the world and made films, and then ultimately moved back here about 10 years ago.
Wow. So, I mean, people must have felt you pretty talented. I mean, you started getting films and films and films, right? I mean, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate, and I worked with five Academy Award-winning directors in the first dozen films I made, and that certainly helped me out. You're really at the hands, it's a director's medium, so a lot of times you're at the hands of the talent of the director and their ability, and I think I do have something to offer, but I think, you know, a lot of it has to do with material, you know, how good is the script and how good is the interpreter, and I was fortunate, for sure.
Yeah. So what are some of your more memorable projects that
you did? Well, you know, I mean, I've been doing it a little over 20 years now, and so I have.
Did you have like a favorite or something?
I loved working with Ang Lee. We did a movie that it's kind of the only movie of his that wasn't properly released, and
really,
it was because of the content. They were scared of it was a Civil War movie, and ultimately about a black Confederate soldier, and the distributor was really scared of the political ramifications of them releasing that movie, so they kind of sat on it, and but we spent 7 months making that movie, and it was incredible. You kind of name anybody and they're probably in it.
Really?
It was a stellar cast. Mark Ruffalo had like one scene in it before he was Mark Ruffalo.
And what was the name of the film?
It was called Ride with the Devil.
Oh, wow.
That one was a blast. Newton Boys was a lot of fun. I love period pieces. That was a 1920s true story about four brothers from Texas who were the foremost train robbers of the time. And it was McConaughey and Ethan Hawke, and D'Onofrio and I were the four brothers. And then
I have to catch that movie. It sounds good.
Yeah, it's good. It's a fun piece. And I've got one coming out in March with Jim Wilson, who did Dances with Wolves and produced many Costner films. And he wrote and directed one about the 2009 Kentucky Derby winner, Mind That Bird. And he came from very auspicious beginnings, and I play his trainer, who is not doing so well, was not successful necessarily in the massive stage of horse racing, and drove his horse to Kentucky. They qualified somehow for the Derby and drove his horse there, and they beat the billionaires, the second longest shot ever to win the Derby.
Really?
Yeah. So that comes out in March, and you just keep going on doing things. You know, I just did another Civil War piece a couple weeks ago for Nicholas Sparks, and hopefully that'll become a series as well.
Great. So you got a great body of work by now, and you're still young. I'm sure there's still a lot you're going to do.
I'm sort of young. I think you have to have it, you have to feel the need to tell stories. And I know when I don't, I something in me changes.
Really?
So it's like up a... And, it's a way to, from my upbringing and certainly in the South, there's a lot of unsaid things. A lot of things go on in families and life that just aren't talked about, you know. And for me, it was a way to say those things without, the line of dialogue can say one thing, but it means 180 degrees to me. And, I can say those things that I've always wanted to say and intended to say and just couldn't say. And I get some of the best writers in the world to verbalize it for me. And when I'm not doing it, I just feel like something inside of me is not released.
Wow. Well, it's great. I'm very inspired to see people that actually reach their goals and do something they enjoy doing. And Amelia, how about you? What was some of the memorable roles that you had that stay with you?
Let's see.
Like something that means a lot to you, probably some of the earlier projects, right?
Well, I remember going to Asia for my first time for a film. It was a action movie, sort of a take on the 80s sort of B-movie action movies. But going to Asia for the first time for a film was an amazing experience. I was in the Philippines, rural Philippines in Cebu for 4 months during typhoon season. So I weathered some serious typhoons while I was there and really got to see some of the world that I didn't know existed. And that was a very interesting experience for me. My role in Point Magoo, I would say, is something I'm the most proud of. It's a full arced character, and I was able to put my heart and soul into it from the writing and, the acting. And I'm just trying to think of some other roles that have really spoken to me.
That's okay. But so Point Magoo, we talk so much about it, we can't even see it yet. You know what I mean? So we're building up the anticipation and everything. Okay. Sounds good. Well, guys, so you just got married recently, mm-hmm. right? And congratulations to you.
Thank you.
And you met on a set, which is amazing as well. Mm-hmm. And
that's cute.
Yeah, that's good. So now you guys are working together. So you've been married for a year and a half. When did you meet? How long ago did you meet?
It was about 3.5 years ago.
Oh, 3.5 years. Yeah. I see. Yeah. Okay, cool. Well,
and I'm really proud of Skeet because he makes his directorial debut on The Girl on the Roof. So he to actually direct Naya in that.
So, I mean, is there anywhere where people can go and find out more about this online?
One day there will be. We have a website for Point Magoo. It's pointmagoofilm.com, where you can see the different festivals we've played at and the awards we've won, a little bit of information about the filmmakers. And it's we have a festival coming up in April where you're welcome to come. We would love to see you there. Wow. It's going to be in NoHo at the Lumley. At Sinfest, mm-hmm. and we'll be in other festivals as well in the area at some point.
Nice. Well, we're definitely going to follow this and see, because I'm intrigued to see it now,
yeah,
you know.
It's exciting.
That we've talked about it and stuff. So, awesome. Well, Amelia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Skeet, thank you. You thank guys you. Are fascinating and a great couple, and I'm sure you guys are happy. You look glowing and everything, so that's a good thing.
It's probably the frostbite.
I know, it is cold. So you guys stay warm. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mia.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam in the Morning with Mia, which airs every Monday through Friday from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. If you have a question for the show, or if you'd like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please send an email along to sam@latalkradio.com. Sam in the Morning with Mia is a production of LA Talk Radio, where we say what we want.